You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Zach and Josh, brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
Hour number two on a Wednesday of the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show, brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. Zach Jones and Josh Mint here, and joining us now on the West Her Hotline, following his sit-down with Bills head coach Sean McDermott, is our own Sal Capaccio. Sal, good morning. How are we doing today?
Pretty good, guys. Good morning to you as well.
So we do have some injury news for the Bills. Taron Johnson, it was, I believe, outright confirmed earlier in the week, and then Dwayne Smoot confirmed today, and then we also know Javon Salomon is doubtful.
Yeah, that's right. You know, this injury with Smoot happened last week, late in the week, and there was nothing. He was fine until Friday it popped up, and McDermott told us and told me on the Extra Point Show last Friday that Dwan Smoot was going to be dealing with a toe injury, and he, you know, they were going to monitor him. Well, then he missed the game. That was something they had to kind of change up as of Friday to Saturday. Well, obviously he's out again in this game. The Bills will obviously have an opportunity here to, you know, kind of evaluate how they played it on Sunday. We'll see if there's any elevations. It was Cameron Klein last week. Is that again? Kingsley Jonathan would be available to elevate. We'll see where they go there. As far as Taron Johnson is concerned, we know that Cam Lewis is the backup nickel cornerback. That's why I asked Sean McDermott about Cam and his journey. 6 years in the league now, 6 years in the system. He knows it very well. He's a very, very important player for this roster for all the different things that he can do. So he'll be the main backup nickel corner. And now you wonder, when the Bills do go to that dime package, last week it was Jamarcus Ingram, which he's not, it's not really his thing, right? He's a corner who was put there last week due to circumstance. I wonder if this is Cole Bishop time, guys. I wonder if Cole Bishop sees his first action in an NFL regular season game, and is that what the Bills play is on in that dime package?
On Taron Johnson, just for everyone, because now it's sort of kind of feels like we're all waiting for the IR news, if he's going to be placed on there. Mm-hmm. If not, what's the timeline for the Bills to actually be able to do that?
Yeah, good question. As opposed to a Sunday game, when you play on a Sunday, you have to make all those moves by Saturday at 4 p.m. For a weekday night game, you don't have to do that until you announce your inactive list. So that would be 90 minutes before kickoff. Now, we could hear something tomorrow evening or even today, whatever. But if the Bills are to put Taron Johnson IR on IR or whatever elevations they're going to make, that doesn't have to actually be announced until tomorrow evening before the game. So for anybody who thinks, well, they didn't do it today, so that means they're not going to do it, that's not the case. It doesn't mean they're going to do it. What they're going to do is sit down and figure out how long is this injury going to keep them out for. If they think it's 2 weeks, they won't put him on IR. They'll bring them back. If it's 3 weeks, if it's 4 weeks, that's a decision to make, guys, because if they don't put him on IR, they have to carry him on the roster, eat up a roster spot while he's just inactive, which they can do. Or if they know it's going to be about a 4 week or more injury, then my guess would be they would put him on injured reserve.
So with quarterback Josh Allen, we know that he's cleared to play on Thursday. He had a kind of a big glove on his left hand yesterday. I mean, what were some things you saw at practice yesterday? What's some stuff that we can maybe look for? But is he's looking okay, right? Like nothing really different there?
Well, he's medically cleared to play. That's what matters, right? And he's been a full participant. So as Sean McDermott said, you know, obviously, you know, you have the injury, you have the injury check with trainers. We know that he went through all of that. And if you go back and listen to that interview with Sean McDermott, he said, you know, his first thing is he medically cleared to play? Okay, he is. Then you go from there, right? And they're not going to give you the game plan, obviously, but my assumption would be, you know, you have to keep that in mind a little bit, what he's dealing with, what can he do, can he do? From Josh's standpoint, he said he felt good yesterday. He could do everything he normally could do. Yes, he's wearing the glove on his hand. That's a little bit different. I don't know if he's going to wear the glove in the game, guys. Maybe. Maybe he doesn't. Maybe it's just for practice, for precautionary measures. You know, they could wind up, you know, taping it a little bit, or, you know they had the two fingers that were taped together. So we'll see. But he's medically cleared to play. He's good to go. In fact, McDermott said outside of Taron Johnson, Dwan Smoot and being out, and then Javon Salomon being doubtful, he said everyone else is good to go.
Real quick, you brought up Cole Bishop as well on that point. He seemingly has been somebody, as preseason was sort of wrapping up, all of a sudden he was starting to practice more, then became a full participant. Inactive last week, but Sal, as you brought up, this could be his time now to jump in with the injuries as well. you got to imagine the Bills feel a bit more comfortable now that he has been able to have a full go here. He has been able to start getting reps where ultimately he effectively missed all of the reps he could get in the preseason and training camp due to injury.
Yeah, listen, there's a few things at play here, though, right? Which is the health of him. Is he ready to go? Which he's been a full participant. But then it's how comfortable you are putting him in a defense that he's not, you know, he's still learning. And let's remember who the opponent is here, right? This is a Miami Dolphins team that's going to play with your eyes a lot. They're going to do a lot of different things with motion. You know, are you ready to insert him into that situation for his first NFL game experience on the road, under the lights, in Thursday Night Football? I just think that that's something you have to really consider with all of this. Now, you could simplify the plan and say, okay, when you're in there, Cole, this is just your job. You go cover the tight end. Bam, one-on-one. That's fine. When you're in there, you stay in this spot. Like, that's fine. And, of course, I'm not giving him enough credit maybe for allowing him to do more. But certainly, you don't, to me, have your full playbook available to you on defense with all 11 players when he's on the field in that situation in his NFL debut, as you may have with a guy who's been a little bit more experienced. So I think that's just a needle that Bobby Babich is going to have to thread a little bit here if in fact, that Cole Bishop plays. We don't know that. He could still be inactive again, guys, but if he does play, I think you have to think about all that stuff.
So looking at the other side of the field real quick, Dolphins this morning rule out Raheem Mostert with a chest injury, and Devon Achane is a game-time decision, according to head coach Mike McDaniel. What are your thoughts there, Sal? I mean, that's if both of those players are out, that's a big blow for the Dolphins' offense.
Yeah, it is a very big blow for the Dolphins' offense. Listen, they have so much speed, and obviously those two guys are guys that really accentuate that speed of what they have all around the roster. It's not just Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle and everybody. It's their running backs. They'll get to the running backs. They get to the edges. That's how they've attacked the Bills here in their games the last couple of years. The game in Buffalo, they really did that well. The Bills actually did a much better job against them down in Miami doing that. Now, if they're without, now we know they're going to be without Mostert, so that puts a little more workload on Devon Achane, except we don't know if he's even going to play. So even if he has to have a little more workload, can he handle that? What if he doesn't play? Well, the next guy in line, whether it's going to be in lieu of both these guys or just as a backup to Achane, the next guy in line is Jeff Wilson. Jeff Wilson's no slouch. He's a pretty good player. He played in San Francisco, went to Miami. He can catch the ball a little bit out of the backfield. But I think more than anything, it's just about kind of the numbers and the workload. And, you know, we'll see. It's having Mostert out, even if Achane plays, probably impacts even the workload of Achane because he's dealing with an injury. You don't really have a backup behind him. So you have to kind of, you're the Dolphins, keep that in mind as well.
All right, Sal, last thing here before we let you get out of here. I know you got a flight to catch. In terms of it being a Thursday night game, what is sort of the itinerary for Bills fans to kind of keep up with heading into game time tomorrow night?
Yeah, so the team will fly out today to South Florida. And then tomorrow, there's usually typically a walkthrough for the team at the team hotel or nearby or whatever. They generally do that during the day for a night game. That's pretty protocol for any team traveling. You know, and then obviously the game gets going tomorrow night and, you know, fly right back home. And we'll have a Buffalo Bills football reaction Friday, I guess, and hopefully a win to talk about to go 2-0. I mean, this is for early supremacy in the AFC East. And, hey, the Patriots are right there too, right? They won their game. But whoever wins this game has the early lead in the AFC East at 2-0, and then we'll see what the Patriots do. And that's why it's a really big game. Of course, a division game, tiebreakers, and a lot here early in the season in this game.
All right, Sal. Well, let's get out of here. Thanks for joining us for this until you go get your flight. We'll talk again later.
All right, guys. Thanks a lot.
That was Sal Capaccio there on the Wester Hotline, giving his thoughts post the conversation with Bills head coach Sean McDermott from earlier this morning. And again, ultimately, the Bills had a lot of injuries in the preseason, and it was a little bit of a worry, but now it has become, well, they're managing it. It's two big names that are out for, you know, we'll see about Taron Johnson, but he missed basically the entire first game. I think he was out by like the third or fourth play of the game, and then he was ruled out very quickly for week two. We'll keep an eye on that if the Bills do place him on IR. If they don't, but he's at least effectively going to miss two games. And then Matt Milano, of course, he is basically out for the whole season. They're hoping for a December return. Outside of those two big injuries, and they are big injuries, I don't want to like act like they're, you know, they mean nothing. The Bills have managed their injuries very well. We'll see about Curtis Samuel as well. He's somebody that's dealing with turf toe. Didn't play a ton in week one. Ultimately, you know, we'll see if that continues to be a trend or if that's sort of just, you know,
hey, he's still coming back from it. Or it could also just be they were keying in on him.
Don't worry. Anyone out there that's also superstitious like me, as Zach was saying, that I knocked on the wood paneling we have on the wall in the studio here.
I was wondering what you were doing.
Don't worry. It's done. I didn't want
to bring anything up, but I was
I looked at him and I smiled while I was knocking on the wood. How do you not get that? Knock on wood when you're talking about injuries. Like, please.
That's fair.
What are we doing here? You know how superstitious I get. I know. This is crazy.
Yeah. I'm fine with it.
What are you doing to me?
I'm fine with it.
But no, I agree with you, though. I mean, it's a good spot for the Bills to be in, I think, right now, aside from the two big injuries, of course. Mm-hmm. I am interested. Sal brought up the glove that Allen is wearing. I'm interested to see if he's going to wear that in the game.
The vibes are going to be so low. It's white top blue pants, and all of a sudden my quarterback's
wearing a
glove.
What is your problem with that? I like the white top blue pants.
No.
It looks clean. It looks nice. It pops.
Every road game, the Bills should be in all whites. Every road game.
The Stormtrooper?
Yes. It's the best. And then you have the white face mask, too, they added.
Yeah, the white face mask is great. But no, I want to look at the glove thing, too, because I'm just, if he does wear it in the game.
I'd be so upset.
I don't know. I think it's just a little, hey, just in case, you know? And I want to see, you know, I would want to see him do some handoffs with the glove on. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if they're clean, then who cares?
That was the big thing everyone was talking about is having to do handoffs with your left hand. Is that going to cause issues? You know, are they obviously going to have to kind of change up? You know, is he going to be able to take snaps under center? We already saw with Atlanta. And that's a much more drastic injury for Kirk Cousins coming off that Achilles, where it was like, hey, he can't move. It's going to be shotgun.
You could tell even when he had to, he could not move.
Very different. The most drastic, example.
Does Atlanta look not stupid now for drafting Michael Penix?
No, they look dumb for giving Kirk Cousins that huge contract.
Aside from that, the focus has shifted from being dumb to drafting Michael Penix to being dumb to paying Kirk Cousins. Maybe they were looking ahead, covering their bases.
Just draft the rookie.
Well, yeah.
And sign Tyrod Taylor, who's a really good backup quarterback.
Yeah, that's true. Goes out one drive on Monday night, throws a touchdown. Good for him.
It's gorgeous. But he starts for four or five games. I don't even totally agree with that. I think Atlanta's a talented enough team to just throw Penix in there.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
So, yeah, you draft Penix, throw him in there. You've got all this talent.
Tell him to hand the ball off to Bijan and just watch.
Or you got Pitts, I don't like the Falcons. I don't like them at all.
Back to the Bills though. With Allen, but, with the glove. Again, that's like the most Sal drastic. Said, we don't know if he's going to wear it in the game. It'd be interesting to see if he does. I don't know. I don't take too much problem with it if he can hand the ball off okay, and if he can snap the ball, if he can receive the ball under center, glove or not, that's fine. As long as you can keep doing your job and you're not, hurting yourself more, then cool. Wear the glove. I think it matches nicely with the outfit. What am I saying? But no, it is funny though because
I hate quarterbacks that wear gloves.
His hand looks so much bigger in the glove too.
I know, but I think it's also quarterback that wears gloves. I'm like, cool. He's gonna throw for under 200 yards.
It's also
gonna be a disaster. Peyton Manning is like the one guy who truly was a trendsetter with it. It's because he couldn't feel his fingertips.
Yeah,
he had to wear it after his neck injury.
It is. It is kind of weird.
Don't give me Brady. He has no drip. He has no swag when he's out there on the field. Don't give me him.
Have we ever seen Josh Allen wear a glove before?
I don't think so.
I don't think so.
No, I don't think so.
There was never a rain game where he might have wore it.
I don't think so.
I feel like if you try to wear gloves in the rain, that's even worse.
Well, yeah, but the gloves are sticky. No, that's right. They get unsticky.
See, I remember Justin Fields, maybe this was his rookie year against San Francisco, playing Trey Lance in that monsoon in Chicago.
Yeah.
And he had two gloves on.
Yeah. Two gloves is never the answer. Like when Kenny Pickett would wear the two gloves.
Kenny Pickett, Teddy Bridgewater.
It's not the right move.
Oh, it's the worst.
It's like wearing two gloves as a baseball player. You wear one batting glove. You wear one glove as a quarterback if you're going to wear one.
And the baseball players that do wear a glove and then put on the mitt, the worst.
I hate it.
The worst.
I can't stand
it. I saw, and it was not a lot of people, but it was some on Twitter yesterday who were like, well, I like the glove. And I'm like, cool. Blocked.
Hey.
Never going to see their opinions again. Blocked.
Fine.
Gone.
Fine. Block me right now. Do it.
You don't think
do
I
it.
Will, which
do
is
it.
Bad.
Do it. But I'm not scared.
It's not where I'm superstitious, but I do not like them wearing the white tops, blue pants. It's a night game. It should be all whites in Miami. That stadium always kind of gives off a good look. The Bills wearing their blue tops, white pants in Miami Stadium always looks very good. It looks good on television. The blue tops, white pants, because they've worn their home uniforms a lot in Miami.
Because of Miami's like alternates and stuff.
Miami will then wear white,
right?
Because it's 1 o'clock in South Florida in September,
and you're sitting on the sideline in the sun.
But the Bills' blue tops look good on TV when they're playing in Miami. They do.
Yeah,
they do.
Yeah, they pop. But honestly, of all the things I'm superstitious about, this is not one of them.
The uniforms?
Yep.
I can't even say I'm superstitious. I like my teams to look
good.
Give
into it. Embrace it.
No, well, that's my thing. I'm not a big like alternate uniforms guy. I just don't really care for them all that much. Like the NBA has some pretty good alternate ones.
Unless it's the goat head.
The goat head I do like, but I like the goat head more just for the historical aspect. Like the historical alternates I like.
Yeah, okay.
But the alternates that we're just going to create just for...
Oh,
I'm not a huge fan of those.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Some of them I love. Minnesota's all-white uniforms, ooh, I think are going to look really good. I kind of hope they actually keep them long-term because I think they are going to pop. But for the most part, like I like the Bills to have the blue top, white pants, home uniforms, and the all-white away uniforms and be done. I don't love all like the different combinations and stuff like that. I think Arizona ultimately wore like kind of like an iteration of like their 80s uniforms on Sunday against the Bills. And I was like, eh, it was fine. The Eagles wore sort of like a black alternate away against the Packers. And I'm like, eh.
See, but those are
not great.
Those are, I like the black Eagles jerseys. I think they look nice.
Green Bay also has one where they're all green. Like I think that's their version of the color rush. Good. No. I do not like the Bills color rush. That might be my most controversial opinion. I hate it.
I'm not fully against you there, but I don't know. It's not that bad.
Sorry, my buddy 3 years ago was like, it's longer because the Sean McCoy was still on the Bills. So it was like 8 years ago. And he's like, do I get like a red or a white Sean McCoy jersey? And I'm like, well, if you get a red one, we're not friends anymore. that makes your decision easier. He ended up getting a red one. We're still friends. But neither here nor there.
Coward. You didn't stick to your morals.
No. 803-0550 is the number to call. Let's get to your calls here. We go to Zach on the line. Zach, how are we doing today?
Hey, good. I called in about the glove, but you got me thinking about uniforms. So listen, I don't understand why they don't go back to bring it back the 90s blue, late 80s, 90s blue with the red helmets. They'd make a ton of money, number one. Number two, it's all over the internet. It's kind of like when we were pushing really hard for the royal blue. It's kind of like I love Seattle's throwback uniforms. There's some atrocious uniforms. I'm so sick of Nike thinking it's cool to put big letters, Arizona, or big letters, whatever the city is on the chest. It's kind of dumb. But what I really called in for was the glove. Listen, he's playing us. It looks cool. It reminds me of Peyton Manning. I do think Brady wore it a couple of times. I think maybe because it was cold. But he's playing us. It's just like the visor. We all see it in practice. And then next thing you know, he rolls out and he's like, nah, I'm not going to do it. I do wonder, though, if he does wear it. I don't think he's going to, but if he does, I'm only worried about, like, taking a snap from under center. I don't know which hand he has, on the center usually. But that's where I get worried. Does he not feel it? Does he jam it up a little more? And I hate to be limited. Not that, we can't operate a shotgun. But that's one thing no one's really talking about is, like, under center. I don't think it'll hamper his ability to throw it. I do wonder. He does sometimes, not quite stiff arm, but kind of hold a guy off him and while he's falling to the ground and still throw it. I do wonder, would a defender grab his hand and try to, inflict a little pain there? But, I do wonder about the center exchange. And then ultimately, I don't think he's going to wear it. He's playing us. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Zach. I didn't even think about the visor thing. That is something that breaks my heart, at least one training camp and or the return to the blue and red practice, that Allen will come out in a visor. I'm like, he looks awesome. He's 6'5", he's 230. He looks like a guy out of a fantasy novel.
He looks like a poster of what you would think of a quarterback.
And then it never does it. And this is my thing. I think the glove is dumb. So for me, I'm like, I hope he doesn't wear it. But there will be people out there, not judging, that will look at the glove and go, oh, please wear it.
There will be side-by-side pictures of him and Peyton Manning.
Probably. And I don't want that. It's not a good look. When quarterbacks are wearing gloves, Peyton Manning and Tom Brady are the outlier. Tom Brady also had no swag with it. So like, let's stop. And Peyton Manning... more of a medical reason he was wearing it. Quarterbacks wear gloves. it's a sign of disaster. You're in like DEFCON 1. We all laughed about Kenny Pickett's small hands, but he wore gloves, and Pittsburgh was like, it's Dan Marino all over again. Did you see him at Pitt? Yeah, he wore two gloves. You should have known. The signs were all there. You should have known. Let's go back to the phones. We've got Mark here on the line. Mark, how are we doing today?
Hey, guys. You hear me on? Yeah, I just think, is Kurt Warner the best two-glove quarterback to ever
Kurt Warner.
He, for Arizona, I mean, he was on fire that year. But, yeah, no, I want to see Josh Allen throw the ball 40-plus times this game. I want to go back and say this is the Dalton Kincaid game that, you know, these little, almost use it as, remember the Patriots, they kind of use these short passes as a way to run. And for the sake of not being able to hand off with his left hand, I mean, playing with a broken hand, man, this guy's got some stones because he's going to feel that every single play. And, yeah, no, I don't have a great feeling about it, but, I mean, if we win, I think we really got to see a big game from Kincaid and Shakir doing these little short, little gadget slants, just how Brady made a living with Edelman and those guys. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I hope that's what happens. I'm having to listen. Thanks, man.
Thanks, Mark. I don't. It hasn't been officially said it's a broken hand.
No,
I do know though. Joe brought up the middle finger and the ring finger had been taped together. Yep. As someone that has broken my hand, that will happen. They do the tape thing.
Mm-hmm.
It sucks.
And if you look when he comes down, on
it's his elbow. Yeah,
but it's those two fingers specifically that his elbow is kind of splitting.
Yeah,
like there, it's his elbow goes between because you're putting your hand on your elbow when you do that. Your fingers kind of naturally mm-hmm. cradle it and. The two that split are your ring finger and your middle finger.
Yeah.
So I'm assuming that's where the main point of contact mm-hmm. was, and that's probably why.
On the throwing the ball, though, that is something I've pushed, that I think they are going to use the short passing game as sort of an almost like the run game. I think, honestly, they will probably run the ball more than maybe I was anticipating. I mm-hmm. was somebody that was banging the drum that it was more due to necessity, what have you. But it's tough for me to totally put it onto week one because they were going up against a bad run defense. And ultimately in the first half, they were getting on average over 7 yards per carry. It would have been coaching malpractice to go away from it until they proved they couldn't stop it. And then they kind of kept though doing it in the second half. And that's my fear. I do want them to throw more. Allen seems to pick apart the Dolphins every time he plays them. Doesn't even matter who's on the field for the Dolphins. He seems to just have their number. That happens a lot with divisional opponents. Brady played some of his best games ever against the Bills. Dak Prescott has made nearly a living, especially early in his career, of just making fun of Washington and the Giants. You know, that happens. And Allen's victim seems to be the Dolphins.
How would you feel if he threw for 40-plus passes?
I'm thrilled.
Like Mark said.
Thrilled.
I would be, too. I mean,
but I also think it is, to what Mark's point is, it's going to be the short passes just getting the ball out quick.
But we talked about it yesterday. How we can potentially, we have to see as the games go on here. Is the Bills' offensive scheme going to drastically change each and every week? Because last week it was run the ball, run mm-hmm. the ball, run mm-hmm. the ball. And then all of a sudden it was, hey, here's some important passes as the game went on.
Yeah.
Is this game going to be the inverse of that where it's pass, 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 and then boom, a big run breaks off? You know what I mean? Like, I think... If that happens, it's kind of an indicator of what we're going to see throughout the season of this scheme constantly changing and just being drastically different each and every week. Which
rather than this is what we do,
right.
And we're going to do
this
really
This is a base of what we do, and we're not going to deviate too much.
Yeah.
Be a jack of all trades and a master of none, essentially, which might work out, but
it can work out because of who your quarterback is.
Right, but there's dangers with that, too, because if you have... this constant fluctuation in what you're doing, your players could get confused. Your players could,
get frustrated.
Get frustrated, right. I mean, there's a lot of issues that could arise with that. But if you can make it work and if everyone stays happy and healthy,
it can work.
There you go.
803-0550 is the number to call. What do you want to see tomorrow night for game day? But coming up after a quick timeout, Patrick Hammer, chief meteorologist of WGRZ, joins the show as we get a look at the weather down in South Florida. We'll also get a little bit of a look for Buffalo as well. It's getting hot out after having a few days of quote-unquote elite season. We'll do that after a quick timeout. You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show on WGR. Break it down! everyone. Zach Jones and Josh Mitt here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show, brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. And that music does mean we go to the Western Hotline as we are joined by Chief Meteorologist over at WGRZ, Patrick Hammer. Pat, how are we doing today, man? What's going on?
I'm good. And by the way, guys, I really want to applaud you for allowing you and your listeners to do a little reflection on 9/11. I think it's important. I think it's cathartic. And I think, you know, we all need to kind of, I know you guys are a bit younger, but you still have memories and you allowed a lot of those that needed to express theirs to have a voice today. And I just appreciate that because you're right. Watching the video that you recommended on the documentary on those French filmmakers, which I had seen originally. I mean, that's powerful stuff. So I think that was important stuff to do today.
Well, thank you so much. Yeah,
yeah,
and we've had a few people tweet at us as well, other documentaries. No sports tonight. I mean, that's probably what I'm going to be watching, or at least checking some of those out. Pat, what do you remember from that day?
Well, not much has changed for me. I was working in morning television during that period. I was in a very different area. I was in Albuquerque, New Mexico, working for the CBS station. And I, at the time, Brian Gumbel, who's most famous for the Today Show on NBC and, of course, HBO World Sports, or, you know, sports. But at the time, he was working for CBS, CBS Morning News, and we were just ending our morning show. And I'm on the weather wall about to do my forecast. And in my ear, I'm told, toss to Brian Gumbel for a special report. And we're like, okay. So I'm like, we now go to CBS News and Brian Gumbel for a special report. And the first image you see is of the first, you know, it's after the explosion. The only documentary film, I think, to capture that was that documentary that you mentioned, because no cameras were turned to the building at the time. And it was thought to be a small plane. That's what everybody kind of thought. Nobody knew. And from there, you know, my experience was like everybody else's, just like in shock and awe. And then, of course, 17 minutes later, when now all the cameras are pointed to both towers, you see the second one hit live. And that's when, you know, our world changed.
Yeah, absolutely. And something I should have brought up when we were talking about in the first hour, too, don't want to forget about the third plane that ultimately the passengers were able to take over. It was, of course, heading towards the Pentagon. I've seen, I want to say a documentary, but I think it was one of those dramatizations about it. But that was something, right, for years growing up, you know, until I was like 10, 11, 12, did not know there was a third plane. It was just something that was never really brought up in my life.
There was a fourth plane, of course, the one that actually hit the Pentagon.
Yep.
But yeah, that final one, there's an incredible, I mean, that's where the famous line, "Let's roll," mm-hmm, was captured on a cell phone, which is when a young man from, I believe, where I'm from, San Francisco, kind of led the charge to rush the plane and take over the hijackers and, you know, bring the plane down before it did anything even worse.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah, it's one of those things. I mean, me and Josh have talked about it. We were 3 and 4 years old. My brother at the time was born 3 months before the events, too. So it's we're entering that period now where, you know, when we have kids, if they ask us about it, we're going to have to sit there and go, ask your grandparents. We don't really know. And so I think it is important to kind of share stories, have those stories be told so that it is not forgotten.
Yeah, I mean, I've got kids who are teenagers, and for them, it's, you know, history book material.
Mm-hmm.
And I do my best to, you know, not for the dramatization of it, but just to see it, is to watch some of the videos every single year and just really capture the tragedy that happened firsthand as we all saw it. And yeah, there's more of a disconnect as it's getting a little farther. And I mean, a disconnect with the kids, our kids' generation that don't have a direct link to it. Many do, of course, that had parents or relatives who perished. But, you know, with my kids, it's, you know, something they see in the history books. It's like, no, it's, you know, it's very raw. It's very real. And, you know, I when I was listening to you guys earlier today and you brought up that documentary, I was like, oh my gosh, I remember that. You know, they were just taking regular footage and the camera, I think, was pointed at the ground, and then you hear the roar of the plane overhead and they immediately tilt their camera up. And that was the, like, really the one video of that first impact. Anyway, I just really thought your show this morning was important.
Thanks so much. But on to the game coming up on, tomorrow. Bills going to Miami, but it's at night. Is that going to change the weather, though, all that much, or is it still going to be, you know, hot as you know what?
We were joking on our show this morning how 2 years ago it seemed like the Miami Dolphins installed heat lamps and mirrors on our sideline to make it even hotter, right? I mean, it was just so terribly, let's reflect the sun on the visitor's bench. This being a night game, the sun will not be an issue. It is going to certainly be warm. It is certainly going to be humid. 84 is the kickoff temperature. It will feel like it's in the 90s when you add in the humidity, so the heat index will be up there. There also is a chance of some rain. There will be some wandering thunderstorms, which is very typical, of course, for South Florida this time of the year. So that can't be ruled out. There could be a little impact from some rain. Very little wind, but at least it will not be Hades like it was 2 years ago.
Pat, you just mentioned thunderstorms, and my mind immediately went to a delay, and my heart sank. I know like nothing has happened, but I'm like, oh, it's going to be a long day already. Don't do that to me.
I know. And those of us that work in the morning, you know, it's like, come on. You're already messing with me with this schedule.
But that's right. I'll be able to actually sleep in. It'll just be a long night. Josh will have to get up in the morning.
Right.
Yeah, no, I'm not looking forward to any potential delay. Please, please push the thunder away from Miami. Do whatever you can, Pat. I would really appreciate it.
Delays there don't usually last that long if they do happen. Mm-hmm. I guess you can't rule it out. But, what's also interesting is that not too far away will be a landfalling hurricane from, Florida is where it is. South Louisiana is going to have a hurricane move on shore later today, tonight. By tomorrow night, it'll be moving into the southeast. It will have no impact on the Bills game, but it's just interesting that not far from where the Bills are playing, a former hurricane will be spinning through.
Speaking of extreme weather, Pat, we'll get to the fact that it's going to be September 12th tomorrow, and it's going to be the 80s in Buffalo. Personally, thrilled. But tornadoes around Western New York have become a thing. What is that about?
Okay, so yes, 9 tornadoes have occurred across Western New York this season, which is a crazy number for us. 31 across the state of New York. The old record was 21, I think, set in 1992. So we've shattered that. Okay, on a grand scheme of things, this has not been a terrible severe weather season for us. It just seems that whenever there's a little severe weather, there's a tornado. And, you know, there's no real rhyme or reason. There's a couple of things just to quickly highlight. The tornado that, you know, of course, hit, we had 2 of them, one that hit Eden. That was actually spawned by the remnants of a former hurricane, Beryl. And sometimes when tropical systems move this far north, they can get the atmosphere to twist in certain ways, and that's not totally uncommon. The 2 tornadoes that we had Monday were crazy because they were actually caused partly by very cold air, not necessarily warm and humid air, but it was, if you recall, the weekend was chilly. Monday was kind of chilly, and we had tornadoes occur when it was in the 60s, which is also really bizarre. But you had some interaction with some breezes off Lake Ontario and Lake Erie. The same process occurred back on August 6th when we had the downtown Buffalo tornado, which was also crazy. So it's been a very bizarre season, one we're going to kind of study. Is it a sign of things? You know, that's up for debate. But you can put some blame on the tornadoes this season on some things, including a former hurricane and exceptionally cold air in the upper levels of the atmosphere over the weekend and on Monday, and a warm lake. And boom, you get the recipe for some severe weather.
Well, we're not going to really have any of those cold temperatures moving ahead over the next few days, right? I mean, what's this little heat wave here? Is this how the rest of September is going to be, or is this just kind of like a weekend thing?
For the foreseeable future, yeah. We've got around 80 degrees today, and get used to that. It's going to last through the weekend and into next week. I wish there was a Bills home game on Sunday because it would have been absolutely beautiful. We're going to see sunshine, 80s through at least next Tuesday. If there's any change coming, it's in a week. So enjoy this stretch of sunny, warm weather that's got at least another 6 to 7 days to go. Crazy. I mean, yeah, after having such a cool fall-like weekend, this is kind of an abrupt change right back to summer.
Is there any chance the mornings are going to be a little warmer? Because when I get up in the morning, it's like, you know, 4 in the morning, and it's 52 degrees when I leave the house, so I put on some jeans and a hoodie or a quarter zip or something, and now I'm going to leave today, and it's going to be 80 degrees, and I'm going to be sweating. So is there any chance the mornings can get a little warmer with the rest of the day?
That is, to me, what I love about, like, warmth in September, because it doesn't usually come with a lot of humidity. When it's humid, it doesn't cool down at night. So that's why, like, in July and August, you can have these, like, 85, 88-degree days, and the lows are in the 70s. In September, the closer you get into fall or towards fall, it's usually not as humid. Dry air cools off quickly and warms up quickly. So you're getting these cool mornings and warm afternoons, and that's probably going to continue. After 80 today, 83 to 85 tomorrow, lows will still be in the 50s. So it does cool off at night, and that, you know, is the definition for elite fall weather, in my opinion. So, yeah, that'll continue. It's not going to warm up at night very much at all.
I guess I'll have to do the daily battle between shorts and jeans, and maybe we'll just have
don't
to suck
like
it
that,
up
though?
Some days. Yeah, that's
up
true.
In the morning,
that's
and it's true. Just like, I know it's going to be a warm day, but I don't have to start like feeling sticky the minute I, you know, leave the house. It's just a nice, cool, fresh air, and then it warms up nicely in the afternoon.
And it makes for such beautiful sleeping weather. Like, it's so easy
yeah.
to just fall asleep. No fan, no AC, just boom, off the bed.
100%. Totally agree.
All right, Pat. Enjoy the rest of your week. Enjoy the game tomorrow. We'll talk again later, man. Thanks for joining us.
All right. Go Bills.
That was WGRZ's chief meteorologist, Patrick Hammer, joining us to talk the weather that has been going on in the world. I will tell you, though, Josh, speaking of sleeping weather here, we got to get to another break, but gorgeous night last night. Open up my window. We're going to let the cool air come in. I'm going to sleep like a baby. What is going on? Someone is banging a hammer on like to metal for like 6 hours, and then it stopped, and then like 4 in the morning today it started again, and I don't know what's happening.
What?
I don't know if it's construction, because I live right by the thruway or, you know, a couple streets over, but it sounded like it was my neighbor doing it, and it wasn't. That's how close it was. It sounded like just right across the street it was happening, and it was not happening.
There is construction happening on the thruway, like near the 33, like the one off ramp to the 33, if you're getting off to go into Buffalo, if you're getting off the thruway to go into Buffalo, that ramp is closed. I see that every morning. I see all the people, you know, kind of finishing up work because they do it overnight. So maybe that's
I don't know. It sounded like Godzilla was making a sword. it was absurd.
I live like a block and a half away from Niagara Falls Boulevard, so I'm always hearing.
Oh, that's
I'm hearing
always
some traffic.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
I'm not built for this. I'm
but
not.
I usually just put in like headphones or something.
White noise. Headphones. Get a white noise machine.
I could do that. Actually, I do.
That's
like
what
that.
I do.
But I'm telling you,
I listen to rain.
It sounded
Ooh.
Like Godzilla was
the
making
sound
a sword.
Of rain. The sound of rain.
So good. Sleeping during a thunderstorm, the best.
Worst when you're a kid, though.
I was never that scared of thunder.
Oh,
I always thought it was really cool.
I was never scared of it. I would just wake up and be like, oh my God, what's happening?
Yeah.
Okay, never mind. Let's go back to bed.
803-0550 is the number to call if you want to join the show here as we wrap up at 12 o'clock, heading over to Sabres Live. But we got one more segment here, so if you want to join, you can do so. Zach Jones and Josh Schmidt and here at 12 o'clock, and you're listening to WGR. Welcome back, everyone. Zach Jones and Josh Schmidt here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Just a few more minutes here until we get you over to Sabres Live. I am currently watching a video of all of Allen's touchdown passes against the Miami Dolphins.
I watched that 2 breaks ago, and I love it. It's also fun to figure out who the passes are to.
Yep.
Because I watched it with no audio. See, and I'm trying to like figure out who everyone is, all the changes in numbers, because I'm like, oh, there's 11, that's Cole Beasley. No, that's not Cole Beasley.
I'm watching it more of like, oh, wow, he has really changed his throwing motion. I do this like once a year, and it's usually in the offseason of like watching Allen's like career highlights, and of course, more get at it. So I'm watching each season. And I'm watching the earlier season. You know, John Brown has a number of these in the 2019 season really alone.
Mm-hmm.
But like watching also these years where I'm like, yeah, like it was sweet when they put up 30 points. Like that meant like Allen was efficient and all of this stuff was happening. And now,
and you're also remembering like what it felt like when, oh, Allen's getting better. He's arriving. He's here. Like
we've hit the 2020 season in the video.
Yeah.
And like,
that's
and like,
the good one.
that's the Gabe Davis has a touchdown in this, which I believe is his first one. It's a diving catch. They're down with about 5 minutes left in the game, 20-17. He catches a diving one. And then the John Brown moonshot is incredible. And then the arm wheel that Allen does. That's close to the game that I realized he had ascended. It's I believe the next week against 2 weeks later against Vegas, where I was like, okay, he's legit now. But my goodness, I know the games have become now more closer. Most of them have become closer games, where before it was just blowout after blowout after blowout.
There was one highlight,
though, just annihilates these
and
guys.
I was confused because, and I'm trying to remember who it was. It was not Dawson Knox, but number 88 caught the touchdown. It was early in the video.
Yes, 2018.
Probably.
Well, now I'm gonna have to find that out.
And I'm trying to do it without looking it up, but I can't remember who it is.
I want to say Jason Kroom, but I could be wrong about that. I feel like that's a. I'm gonna.
Kroom was 80.
Oh, I was. Maybe I had a feeling he was 80, but I just took a guess.
Maybe it was a zero, and I'm just maybe. I don't know. Maybe I didn't see it right, but. Do you find any other 88?
Zero was.
No, eight like. Seeing the zero as an eight, I think I miss.
Oh, but yeah, watching these highlights, I mean, me and you have talked about it because we're young guys. We don't have the 90s, but watching that rivalry become a thing has been awesome to watch. That's going to do it for me and Josh. We'll be back on tomorrow from 10 to 12 for another edition of the Extra Point Show. But coming up after a quick timeout, Sabres Live with the Prospect Challenge beginning on Friday. This is WGR.